Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
That's quite an Uber. I would love to ride a three-headed dinosaur back into town.
Thank you, Wizards. I have a great birthday present now.
This card is insane in this deck.
And now this little itty-bitty 1-2 for 1 is a 4-2.
Phantasmal Imager Meddling Mage, now they can't play a tenth of their deck? Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host, I'm joined with my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
It's doing well today.
Awesome. Very, very cool. On a sunny and warm Friday, how is it up there in the Bay Area, Greg?
Not warm.
Oh.
But it's definitely been warming up all week. I mean, we're hitting early mornings, 50s, 60s. But once we peak over that 11 o'clock, we're hitting 70s and the mid-70s towards the middle of the day. So it's definitely been warming up. I've been feeling it at work. I'm sweating in my clothes with our AC not running because they don't kick it on until it hits like 80.
Blech. Yeah, no, it's definitely too hot for the beginning of February here, so yeah. I don't know what's going on with the weather, but it needs to chill a little bit. You know what else is pretty chill? Some deals that you can get.
Ooh, I like deals.
At Flipside Gaming, at flipsidegaming.com, where you can order any singles or sealed product for Magic and other gaming products as well. And any order over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off of your purchase and help contribute to future show giveaways. We will have details for our next giveaway coming up in the next few episodes. We're trying to hammer out the details, but it is going to be for some sweet, sweet prizes. So stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Greg, let's just jump right into it. We have an interesting new story that came out this last week. So let's head on into Lore Corner. We rejoin who's left on Ixalan in Orozca. As the Immortal Sun disappears, they're all just kind of aghast. They look down, they're like, what the heck? It's gone. And of course, kind of as we predicted, Angrath looks down and he's like, oh snap, what up? You stink, you stink, you stink, you're cool, peace, I'm out. And he planeswalks away.
Yeah. I got to read this flavor text, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What he says specifically, he says, I hate this plane, I hate this city, and I wish you all a viscerally painful death. As he planeswalks away, he says, see you never, pathetic fools.
Kind of a nice, warm-hearted guy there, you know? No pun intended.
Aww.
From his flame chains. But anyway, so...
that was pun intended. Stop it.
So he departs. And so now we're left with four people, I mean, including Mr. Mavern Fane.
Six. Don't forget about Breaches and Malcolm.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's right.
So there's Breaches, Malcolm, Mavern Fane, Vona, Tishana, and Whatley.
Right.
Seven.
Yeah, yeah. So everyone's kind of like in shock right now. They have no idea what the heck just happened. It just vanished. So Malcolm and Breaches, they're like, wow, it's gone. Running away. Breaches screams. And so they
run away.
They take off.
Yeah. So, yeah, they totally vanish to find the rest of the crew of the belligerent.
Yep. Yep. And so then they hear a thump, and sure enough, it's Mr. Mavern Fane, released from his bindings of vines on the walls of this great room, and he lands with a thud, and all of a sudden, you know, a door opens, and a shadowed figure emerges, and that's right, it's Alenda. And
yeah.
So she begins talking to, you know, Vona, and she's like, is it gone? Did the Azure Beast take the Immortal Sun? And Whatley's talking to her. She kind of knows who it is, and she's not really afraid. She's kind of, you know, respectful. She's like, I understand that this is a, you know, a significant figure from a different tribe. You know, we're not gonna hate. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna work through this. And so she's like, yep, it vanished. You know, I saw this beast fly off not too long ago. Obviously, none of them know who Azor is. I mean, Alenda references him, but nobody knows that it's actually Azor.
Well, so Alenda knows it's Azor because she was entrusted, but she doesn't call him that name because he's just the beast.
True. And Alenda even says, because, you know, Mavern Fane is like, oh my gosh, it's St. Alenda. We must go after the Immortal Sun. And then Alenda looks down and she goes, no, my child, we are free. It is gone forever. Do you not feel the change in the city? And that just goes to show her, you know, wisdom beyond her years, such that she understands the corruption that was brought from the Immortal Sun. While, you know, Vona and Mavren are hungry for power here, she's just like, we're better off without it. We, you know, we're no longer tainted. Let us continue with our, you know, being, you know, pious and all this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm. Tashana makes mention that the magic of Orozca has been subsumed there because of the Immortal Sun, and nothing was flowing freely, but now it does. Then Vona gets up, and it's like, how long have you been here, Alenda? You have left us in shambles. How long? And Alenda's like, well, I didn't need to return. I needed to stay here and be protective. Mm-hmm. What I was originally supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Why have you done this? Why have you betrayed us? And Alenda's like, you idiot. In no way was immortality supposed to be for you. We took this gruesome oath so that we can be protectors of the Immortal Sun, and you guys screwed it up.
Yep.
No wonder Torzone is horrible. You need to take me home. I need to finish this because, of course, you guys are all tainted.
Yep.
And Vona's kind of like, but we did this all for you. And in your name. And she's like, I never asked you to.
And you can almost see a parallel here between Alenda and the merfolk. I mean, obviously Alenda's, you know, one of the oldest beings here on Ixalan. You know, the River Heralds have been, you know, again, wise, and they were the protectors, and she's treating herself as a protector as well. But with her absence, you know, the vampires kind of became blind to the real purpose, and the power kind of overtook them. So Vona gets mad and she goes, you're no saint. And, you know, she's getting real aggressive to Alenda here, but Alenda's kind of just like super powerful. And so she's just like, no,
she totally makes Vona bow down to her, kind of smacks her with an ethereal hand and forces her to submit to her will. And then shortly thereafter, Mavren Fane, Vona, and Alenda head off to see Queen Meralda in Torazone.
Yep. And then Whatley starts talking to Tashana here, and, you know, she goes, well, you know, the Immortal Sun is gone. You know, what of this place now? What is this? You know, and, you know, she and Tashana kind of agree, you know, Orozca belongs to nobody. Like, we can now experience peace, you know, without the corruption of the Immortal Sun. You know, it's to be shared from everybody, you know, here on Ixalan.
And she kind of asked Tashana, hey, you want to work together with the Sun Empire? Would you be interested in being a two-party system instead of being alone? And Tashana's kind of like, yeah, I'd be okay with that. You just need to talk to your boss, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, I will. And I shall see you later.
Yeah. And Huatli's like, oh, he might not like it. But, you know, as the warrior poet, she needs to tell, in her opinion, she needs to tell the truth. So
totally.
You know, she gets out, valets her ride, calls Zakama, and Zakama comes and picks her up. And she rides Zakama in style back to her home with the Sun Empire.
Which she notes takes her a lot less time.
Yes.
Because of how big the gape of the comma is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and she won't even need to check her mirrors. She's got two other heads to do that for her.
Aren't all rides home quicker than going to a place?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, no, that's quite an Uber, you know. I mean, I would love to ride a three-headed dinosaur back into town. But anyway, so she arrives to cheers and fanfare, and everyone's super excited to see her. And so, you know, they say, oh, you must, you know, talk to the emperor and, you know, let him know. Or no, she says, I need to speak with the emperor and, you know, give him the account of what happened. And, you know, Itni is telling her, you know, you'd better get that title, you know, you're going to be getting that warrior poet helmet, you know, in no time at all. And she honestly forgot about that. I mean, she's so excited with, you know, the truth and the reality of everything that now it's like kind of coming down and toppling onto her psyche of, oh my gosh, when I tell the emperor all this, he's probably not going to like it. He still wants conquest. He wants power. He wants to expand the Sun Empire. He's not going to want to, you know, pair up with the river heralds and stuff. But
after meeting with her family, she talks to the emperor and tells the story of everything. Mm-hmm. What's going on, how they we're all fighting for the Immortal Sun, what's happening with the vampires leaving Ixalan, the fact that the River Heralds are willing to work together instead of facing each other and fighting it off. And the Emperor is like, no, I need you to go out there tomorrow, tell a story of victory and conquest over Orozca, and it's ours now, and that we need this kind of vigor so that we can take Fort Odonto next week. And she's like, do you not understand anything that just happened?
Yep.
Really? And he's like, sure, they happen, but they're not what's important. Mm-hmm. This is what's important. My agenda is what's important. And she's like, no.
Yeah, he says, our empire cannot grow if we do not expand. And Whatley retorts, our empire has the opportunity to live in peace. So you can see the two, you know, opposing sides of interest here. You know, one side's for peace and one side's for conquest. And, you know, the emperor is definitely set in his ways. So as much as Whatley tries to sway his opinion, describing all that has happened, he still is just not budging. And,
yeah,
you know,
and so they talk about the vampires and taking over Fort Odonto a little bit, and she's like, "You're gonna win. There's no chance of you losing. They're leaving.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna be gone. The fort will be abandoned. There will be no vampires to conquer."
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of says, "Nah, I'm gone. Goodbye."
Yeah.
I'm leaving. I'll see you tomorrow, whatever.
Yeah, and it's funny because the emperor says, okay, well, during your coronation ceremony tomorrow, then you will not say anything. And it's like, that's the warrior poet. She's supposed to be an orator, and if she doesn't say anything, that's going to look kind of weird.
Yeah.
So
she returns to her aunt and uncle's house. And, of course, everybody there is just so happy to see her because she's back. She did things. They've got rabbit and frillhorn tamales, sauces, food, family, everything you could think of a very empire type of civilization. And she starts kind of talking about what happened in Orozca, what happened with Ongrath, how she saw the other side, and just the difference. And her uncle goes, you can't just stay here and be the emperor's pets. Go Whatley, go experience the universe. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't know. And the family's like, do it. And she's like, but I'm the warrior poet, I'm supposed to stay here. And they all kind of go up and say, well, if you're the warrior poet, who cares about our little world? Get us the stories from other worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And then she starts thinking, it's like, oh, you're right. I could do this. I can tell the stories from other worlds. Why would I do just hear Nixlon and Torzone. And everybody in the family's like, oh, I'll pack you a bag. Let me get you some tamales, some rations. You need food. And
yes.
Of course, she's like, I'll be back.
Yep.
So the next few hours, they start kind of packing up. She gets ready. And in the morning, she says, all right, I'll be back in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
She planeswalks out.
There you go. Whatley is now on an adventure to a different plane. We don't know where yet, but the fact that she is now able to leave Ixalan, along with all the other planeswalkers, frankly,
Yeah.
It's very exciting. Can't wait to see where she goes.
So now we've got Vraska, Angrath, and Whatley. Almost all four of our planeswalkers have left the plane, which means the next story is going to talk about what happens with the Sun Empire, because I'm pretty sure they won the rule of Orozca, and Jace talking to the crew of the Belligerent.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think you're right. Also, a little bit of story speculation here. Just curious about Whatley, because her ability mostly revolved around her communication with the dinosaurs, specifically the dinosaurs on the plane of Ixalan. So
I
if
don't
she
know. Her last ability focused around creatures.
That's true. But, I mean, just thinking about if she were to... Well, she is planeswalking away, but based on whichever world she goes to, I guess, you know, her power level may fluctuate. She probably won't be as strong wherever she goes versus here, unless...
Yeah.
Greg, you mentioned maybe it's just her ability to communicate with beasts, you know, more so than just dinosaurs.
I could totally see that her... As a planeswalker, her abilities focus in more on creatures and beings that cannot communicate other than grunts and growls. And possibly she will have a better control over them. But as an orator, maybe she'll honestly just be the voice of everybody.
It could be. I mean, her training and ability to tell stories, you know, could make her a key part. She could be like the bard of the multiverse, you know.
Interesting little thought here.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember correctly, the original artwork when we saw this last year for Atlazan and Conquest of Power, which mm-hmm. were like release stuff and special things, Ajani was a key art planeswalker. What if they took Whatley and changed her to be just like a Johnny? I mean, the transformation's very much the same, where we had a Johnny Vengeant who was very like emotional because of the loss of his brother,
mm-hmm.
and then he kind of changes to this mentor, and that's exactly what I feel like we might be seeing here, is that Whatley is going to change to a mentor. And could she be, like, what if her and Ajani meet up at some point and they go back to Theros and get us back Elspeth?
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Well, if we're going to have two if we're going to have two planeswalkers that are doing the same thing, then that really kind of makes me worry that, you know, we might lose Ajani sometime soon, maybe in another showdown with Bolas, and, you know, Whatley takes up the reins as the Selesnya, you know, group hug planeswalker. But
why can't we have both in the universe?
I guess we could. I mean, there was a lot of speculation about a planeswalker dying when we were back in Amonkhet, and some people thought it was Ajani, some thought it might be Gideon, but, you know, maybe they don't have to die. Who knows?
I mean, who said that they didn't?
I mean, Elspeth died, but that's, you know, neither here
but
nor
she
there.
She died on a plane of places where the undead can come back to life.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, no, you are correct.
And the question is if a planeswalker dies on that plane, does their spark still be ignited? Can they be an undead planeswalker?
Oof, I don't know. I have no idea. But then also, this begs the question, if Whatley does tangle with beasts quite a bit, could we maybe see a reintroduction of Garruk meeting Whatley?
No.
That could be pretty monumental. I mean, we are going to Dominaria, and I'm not saying that Whatley's going to be in two sets in a row, but, you know, that some people think...
We already know Garruk knows where Dominaria is.
Right.
And he's been there.
Right. So, Oh man. It is fun to speculate on this story. It is so good. And yeah, we will find out what happens to our good buddy Jace next. Well, my good buddy Jace, this next story. And
I'm still waiting for my good buddy to come back, okay?
Yeah.
You know or who maybe, my good buddy is, right?
Who's your good buddy?
Garrick.
Oh, there you go.
Garrick's always been my pal.
Yep.
Wildspeaker wins me games.
I mean, let's not forget about our little boy Domri Raid. You know, he could be involved in some of this beast action, too. And he was from Ravnica, which we might return to. So, I don't know.
Might. I'm pretty sure we're returning there.
Yeah.
Relatively soon.
Soon enough. Yep. All right. Well, that will wrap it up for our story section this week. And now, we have some current events, some news and announcements to go over. So, let's jet on over to As Foretold.
I don't have anything to cast this time. My hand is empty.
Hey, have you heard about this new deck that's coming out? The As Foretold, or was it Goryeo's Foretold deck?
Yes, I have.
That's pretty nuts. I mean, As Foretold has been kind of this cool card that's been marinating for a while, and I'm so glad that people are finally starting to crack the surface of its usefulness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Its abilities.
Its abilities. There we go. So anyway, Greg, you wanted to talk a little bit about a Magic mobile game?
Yeah. So over the course of this past week, there was a game developer conference out in South Korea, which, as we know, it's kind of a gaming central for a lot of hardcore gamers.
Just a little bit.
PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, StarCraft, StarCraft II. Diablo, Tekken. WoW, Tekken, just to name a few. Yeah. Anyhow, the minds that create games out there are working with Wizards of the Coast. Now, you may ask me, wait, what? That doesn't sound right. Why would they be working with Wizards of the Coast? And then, well, we don't know all those details, but we do know that there is a Battleground-style game being made. Now, this is going to be for your mobile devices, so it won't be super intense, but it's supposed to be a lot of fun. And what it reminded me of is, I don't remember if you had an Xbox back in the late 90s. I did. There was a game called Magic the Gathering Battlegrounds, which is where you would assume a legendary creature as your character, and you would summon different creatures and spells to fight against another legendary creature. So it's kind of like the forefront idea of when we had Commander. So you would summon Llanowar Elves and different behemoths and this and that and fight each other. It was a lot of fun. It was
that
a really easy way
really
to play.
Cool.
And this game looks a lot like that, where essentially you're going to have two people, one's on one side, the other on the other side, and you'll have your stuff fight each other. Anyhow, this looks like a lot of fun. I really do hope this is going to be an international release and not just a national release to Korea. But it looked pretty well finished, actually. And if I remember correctly, they're calling it Magic the Gathering M.
Okay.
At least that's the working title.
Yeah, that might be their code word for their production. But that's very interesting. You know, I mean, a lot of us associate games of Magic on mobile devices with just playing the card game, but that could be very, very interesting. I know they have Puzzle Quest. There was even talks of like a MMORPG coming out, but
yeah,
this would be the first step in them kind of releasing another game using Magic as a shell, but in a different game format.
They did duel that Duels of the Planeswalkers game, board game, that focused off of the Hex systems and here Mage Quest, Mage Knight.
Oh, was
the game. And you kind of had cards that interacted with it. So you'd have like Chandra and Sorin and Tybalt, and they all had their own different things and how they played. And you would fight against other players, usually 1v1.
Did you say Tybalt?
It didn't get off very well. Yeah, Tybalt was a character.
What? Oh, man. Oh, no.
And I'm pretty sure Avacyn was, too.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Anyhow, you could probably find these at your local clearance bin for like $20 because, well, nobody's playing it because it didn't do too well. whether advertising was bad or put gameplay was mediocre. I think the big issue is that it was a 1v1 game, and when people play board games, it's a 4-6. So it didn't have that multiplayer type of feel that you look for in like Magic or other board games. So it didn't do too hot.
Yeah.
But it was a really cool and interesting idea, and I think this is kind of where they took it. And they decided a mobile platform where people can play other players as a ghost seems better.
Yeah, no, that definitely sounds like a game I would be very interested in. Maybe
to play at games when you're not paying attention to the game.
All right, well, hey, we have another announcement that a lot of people are considering Wizards coming to their senses finally, but that is the return of FNM promo playable cards instead of tokens. Greg, what's your immediate reaction?
Thank you, Wizards. I have a great birthday present now.
Thank you for not using expletives with your excitement.
Yeah.
Well, I know a lot of people were clamoring for this again because I know Wizards was making the push to have Friday Night Magic be a much more casual setting, but the truth of the matter is you got competitive people still coming and playing on at Friday Night Magic events.
Oh, yeah.
I think, Greg, you mentioned previously, you have a lot of competitive events start on the weekends, and this kind of gives them a chance to sort of warm up, so to speak, to that.
Yes.
And plus, you know, promos and prizes draw pretty much anybody, mm-hmm. and you will still have those Saturday standard showdowns.
Oh, like, kind of is an interesting thing. This past weekend here in the Bay Area, Channel Fireball had a Legacy 4K.
Ooh.
That was an in-house event. Now, a pro player could go to an event on a Friday night, play some standard, then they could run down to another store where they're going to run Modern on Saturday, and then run right into Legacy on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So here in the Bay Area, we've got a very unique kind of world where every weekend it's pretty impossible not to find a store that's running a good event.
Right. And then also, just another little tidbit in regards to these FNM promos, the development team that Wizards has put together in conjunction with their printing process, whether you like it or not, gives them the ability to print cards much later than they normally would to still get them distributed to all the stores to be used as promos. Now, what this means is some people were complaining that some of these FNM promos were not very competitive, not very playable. You know, they're not as useful as if we were to get something that's much more of a staple card. Well,
correct.
Once Standard comes out, once these decks sort of rise to the surface and you realize what are the most played cards, now they can actually churn these promos out much later, but you'll still get them at the proper time.
It just means that you get to get more pertinent promos.
Right. You will be getting better promos, more playable promos, which is, you know, fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like blinging their decks out, foiling their decks out, and they don't want cards that they're not going to play with, you know, that they're just going to kind of sit there. So I know, you know, one of the hot cards recently was Fatal Push. You had Aether Hub. I think you had Unclaimed Territory. Or no, that was a different promo. But
that was a different promo.
Right. I mean, also recently you had Serum Visions. But then you also had like Renegade Rallier, which is a good card, but it's not seeing a ton of staple play in any format. And so people were like, why am I getting this as a promo when it's just going to sit in my binder and not be worth anything? So good news on the front of FNM promos. You will be getting ones that are going to be valuable, playable, and very sought after. So
as we talk about promos, what is happening this year in Asian countries?
Ooh, you caught me on that one. I don't know.
They're celebrating their new year, and it is the year of the dog. And I don't know if
mine.
You know about this. There are lucky packs, essentially. The idea is the adults give children these packs. They're usually in red, and they usually have money or gifts or things in them. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, as we're a Magic podcast, and I'm talking about Asian culture, Where could the two get together? Well, Wizards of the Coast did make these kind of lucky packs for Asia, which had a promo treasure token, which had a cash tree in it, and in the art. So it was actually like a cash tree art.
Oh, wow.
Then it had a card that said, Year of the Dog, Happy New Year from Wizards of the Coast. And it was a special release out there. Anyhow, I saw some Canadian stores asking about this to get into theirs because they have huge Asian groups of players.
Wow.
But it's just, it's really cool thing to see that Wizards of the Coast is getting into and being there for other countries because they see this as an opportunity.
Yeah, no, that's very good. I mean, you know, Wizards is definitely touting the inclusivity factor and, you know, any way that they can sort of broaden their horizons, I definitely give them kudos for that. I mean, just the Pro Tour, which we're going to talk about here in a second, broadcast over Twitch, you know, we have the English commentators, but you also can see the fact that since it did start, it was in Spain, and it started in the wee hours of the morning here in the United States.
It did.
But we still had record viewership. I think at the peak, it was about 45,000 plus, not quite 50,000, but you have like that many people watching the Magic Pro Tour, a modern Magic Pro Tour nonetheless, and you just see the global appeal. Like, it doesn't always necessarily have to be broadcast in the United States on our time for it to be insanely popular. In fact, maybe even more popular, as much more of the world can see it when it's broadcast at that time versus, you know, on the East or West Coast here. So I find that very interesting. You know, Magic is definitely a global market with, you know, huge, wide appeal. It's printed in all these different languages, and it's just fascinating to see all the different things that they do, you know, around the world to appease their audience. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. No, it really is. And, you know, thank you, Wizards.
Yeah. Yeah. Good on you. Good on you. All right. Well, kind of alluded to it, but in this last section of our news and announcements, we wanted to talk a little bit about the Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan that happened last weekend. It is Friday, so we've had a week to kind of marinate on it. And, you know, the world is ending. Everybody's got their torches and their pitchforks. They want, you know, lantern control banned, but it's very polarized. You know, you've got half the people calling for a ban for this, half the people saying it's fine, deal with it. And we're gonna dive in our brews segment. We're gonna dive into the top eight as well as some other decks and just kind of go over a couple things. But just as kind of a quick hit here, my own personal opinion. That's ludicrous. I don't think anything needs to be banned out of Lantern Control. I mean, what's your thought on this, Greg? Your immediate thought on Lantern Control?
I mean, there's only three of them in the top 64.
Yeah.
Maybe four. This is not a polarizing deck. This is players not preparing.
Right, and like I said, we'll get into the brewing aspect of it later, but we're gonna definitely go over some hard numbers here. Greg, how many Leyline of Sanctities do you think were in the top eight?
Well, I would expect at least four.
Okay, well, Leyline of Sanctity, of course, is an enchantment that if it's in your opening hand, you start with it out on the battlefield. And it says you cannot be the target of spells or abilities. So essentially, you can't be thought seized. You can't be codex shredded. It will pretty much nerf the Lantern Control deck down to nothing. Well, there was a grand total of zero Leylines of Sanctity in the top eight, which kind of says something. I mean, as wide as the field was with this modern Pro Tour, there's going to be decks that slip through the cracks. And like you said, Greg, not that many people came to play Lantern. And, you know, that might have been a metagame decision to not, you know, to not be gunning for Lantern. Well, you can see the effects. If people aren't prepared, they're just going to get run over. But I can easily see people boarding in, moving forward, just to make sure. I mean, anything like Stony Silence. I know people mention Ancient Grudge. Like, there's lots of answers for this Lantern deck, so much so that I feel there should be no change, no bans. Put your pitchforks away. The format is healthier than it's ever been. You know, stop your riots about these bans. It's getting ridiculous.
It really is ridiculous. So I'm just looking over this Pro Tour Rivals. So in 141 decks, I'm only seeing maybe two or three actually Lantern control.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we all kind of took into account what the modern metagame is. I mean, when you prepare for a Pro Tour, you're like, what's the metagame? What's everyone going to be playing? Well, in modern, the field is so vast that it's very, very hard to game plan. So I want to bring your attention here on the after the first day was over, they had a metagame breakdown. And at the top, you had 43 five-color humans decks in day one, and then 29 of it made day two. So that's a 9.9%, I'm sorry, a 67% conversion rate. And then, as we go down the list, I'm just going to read off these decks here. You might recognize a couple of these. Affinity, Burn, Tron, Grixis Shadow, Eldrazi Tron, Jeskai Control, Blue-Red Gift Storm, Blue-White Control, Dredge, Titan Shift, Devoted Company. These are all mainstays of the modern metagame. Mm-hmm. Not one copy of any of those decks in the top eight. The next one down, Mardu Pyromancer, took second in the whole tournament. So yeah. What does that say to you? Like this whole idea of there being a modern metagame that you need to game for. I mean, I know we just talked about Lantern control and to be aware of it, but none of those decks, the heavy hitters in the metagame, made top eight. That's crazy to me.
So what it really tells me is now more than ever, if you're going to start playing modern, if you want to get into this, choose your deck, think of something you want to play, and then your sideboard can really only consist of what devastates you. Don't mm-hmm. try to defeat the other decks, because guess what? There's going to be so many of them, you're just not going to be able to find something that's going to defeat them all. So you need mm-hmm. to deal with what kills you so that you don't lose out to that. And then you just have to try to grind out the rest of the games.
Right. And just looking here, the highest conversion rate on this chart that I see is Traverse Shadow. And this is like kind of an old school version of the Death Shadow decks when it was originally Jund splashing blue. But that had an 84% conversion rate. Out of 13 decks, 11 made day two, which is pretty significant. But then the next highest you have here are Eldrazi Tron and Jeskai Control. And I think a lot of people were coming thinking Jeskai Control was going to be one of the best decks in the format. But that's just a deck of answers. You know, you have to be, that's a deck where you have to be 100% prepared for everything. And in a Pro Tour of modern format, that's really hard. So one of the decks that I don't see on this list, but did hear, there is a deck that we'll talk about in the brew segment, the Black Red Hollow One deck. I think there were only seven of those that showed up at the tournament. All seven made day two with 100% conversion rate, which is nuts. I mean, talk about putting all your eggs in one basket and just going for broke. You know, if you're running that kind of a strategy, maybe that's the way to go in a big modern tournament like this. You know, find a deck that does something unfair and just jam it, you know, practice it, see if you can get good at it.
I know this is a little forethought here. Did you see the price on Burning Inquiries?
I did not. What's Burning Inquiry sitting at right now?
$3.
For a common? Wow.
Yeah.
M10.
That tells you there are a lot of people that are out there right now that want to play this Hollow One deck. So since this deck's such a new deck, it's interesting, it's cool, it's cheap, expect to see a lot of it.
Yep.
Really.
No, I completely agree. Also, a little bit of news here. You know what Collective Brutality is at right now?
Oh, I don't know, 12, 13.
It's actually come down. It's currently median at 22. That's nuts, man. That card actually was the highest played removal spell in the top eight at this Pro Tour.
Wow.
I mean, it synergizes so well with this Hollow One deck, but it also is just, it's three answers for problems facing you.
Yeah.
I mean, the life gain's an answer to Burn. The -2/-2 is an answer to Affinity and any wide creature deck, Pyromancer especially. And the first one is just an answer to any control deck. It covers all bases. You know,
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are. Okay, well,
so there's a couple interactions too that before we jump in, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, before, okay. We'll revisit Collective Brutality here. We wanted to mention just a couple other things about the Pro Tour that really kind of caught our eye and were interesting and of note. The first thing that I wanted to talk about is there was a match between, let me pull this up here, a match between Luis Salvato, who ended up winning the tournament, and Lucas Esper Berthoud, where, you know, Luis was on Lantern. And one of the newest additions to the Lantern deck was Word of Invention. So there was a moment where Luis cast Word of Invention, and this is in game one, and he goes, he whirs for four, and he, you know, says, I'm going to go get my Witchbane Orb. So he's looking through his deck, and he finds out he does not have his Witchbane Orb in his deck. And this is game one. Instead, he has two Grafdigger's Cages, one of which should have been in his sideboard.
Yeah.
And so it's a very awkward moment here. He does not have the answer he needs to win this game. You know, he was at 5, Lucas was at 17, and if he was able to nail this Witchbane Orb, that pretty much locked him out of the game. So what ultimately happened was, you know, he went and talked to the judge, and my first reaction, well, Greg, what would your first reaction be of how to handle something like this?
Well, I mean, if I had a pro competitive or anything of that sort come up to me asking about this, is like, well, let me see your deck list so that I can affirm what was supposed to be in your deck at the start of the game. And then I would have to say, oh, so you came to the game with an improperly sideboarded deck. Game loss.
Yeah, misrepresented deck list. Issued a game loss. Well, he did get a game loss, but it was for a very weird interaction that the judge gave him. And specifically, and they even touched on this in coverage because, you know, they were having a live feed down to the floor to hear what was happening. Since there were two Grafdigger's Cages in the deck, a judge could have simply said, well, what deck is this in place of? We're going to give you a warning because you actually haven't drawn it yet. You know, we're going to, you know, switch the cards out. You're going to shuffle your library and we're going to move forward from there. Could have done that. But since there were two Grafdigger's Cages, one was in the board, one was in the main, he said, well, we don't know which Grafdigger's Cage this is going to go in for. That just sounds completely asinine to me. So
it really does.
Yeah. So he go and the fact that that was the reasoning, not simply for a misrepresented deck, was just like, you know, it just was really weird. Feel bad.
Here's an interesting thing. Now I don't know what happened here. We were talking about Luis Salvato's deck, correct? He could have made an appeal to the head judge. For a incorrect judge call, which could have had it lessened, which means he may have gotten a warning and not a game loss. I mean, either way, it doesn't matter. We now know he has won. But this is where it's really important for you as a professional or competitive level player to understand how the call system works. In the event that you feel a judge call was improperly made, which is like what happened here, this needs to be appealed to the head judge so the head judge can look at it and say, why did you go about it this way instead of this way? And then that judge gets talked to about how they needed to do it the proper way. I mean, they don't really get in trouble. It's just a, this isn't how we do it. We do it this way instead.
Right. And regardless, if you're a player or a judge, it doesn't hurt to ask questions all the way up to the top.
Exactly. So don't be afraid to just ask.
Yeah, it's also kind of awkward that they're both on the same team. They're both on Team Haruya Latin. And to do this to a teammate, to have this kind of weird, I mean, it's so awkward. So,
well, it was Lewis that called the judge, not his opponent, Lucas, correct?
Right, right, exactly. And so it's like, so how hard...
it's not like he's doing it to his opponent. It's more of a, this is, I'm not paying attention, I screwed this up, I need to get a judge to rectify this, even if it does result in me getting a game loss. And whichever one of us gets that game loss, it happens.
Correct. And my whole point was, like, how high up does Luis want to take this when he's playing against, you know, his teammate? You know, I understand that there are policies and procedures in place to help make things run, but it's like, it was just a weird feel bad moment. So
yeah,
anyway,
no, I don't totally know if any, see that.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you caught that on coverage. One other moment that I want to bring up, and this is actually not just a single occurrence, but this is actually happening more and more the more I watch, was Paul Rietzel was playing against a player, I apologize, I forget who, but there was a moment where he plays Vendilion Click. And before he even says what he's going to do, he wants to know if it resolves. But on putting the click down on the table, his opponent gets ready to just dump his hand on the table and say, what do you want to take? And Paul stops him. He goes, whoa, 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 no, 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 don't do that. Does it resolve? Because, you know, if the opponent were to just lay his hand out on the table, guess what? Paul Rietzel now knows what's in his hand, you know, and regardless if the game continues or whatever the infraction may be, that's going to be some advantage that Rietzel would gain not through just playing the game. And the fact that we have these high-level pros that are very, you know, they're looked up to by a lot of people, and this is on Twitch for 45,000 people, the fact that we have people who, you know, conduct themselves in this manner, they want to get a, for lack of a better term, honorable victory, you know, through the means of just playing the game, really says a lot.
Yeah.
And it helps teach, you know, people who are newer to the game, you know, how to go about playing, even all the way down to your local FNM level. Because ultimately, yeah, this is a game, you know, and we want to have fun, we want to see our decks perform, and we don't like angle shooting. So, you know, kudos to him. I heard somewhere that Reed Duke had a moment like this as well, but, you know, good on them for really trying to preserve the integrity of the game and not do this whole angle shooting garbage. So
yeah,
it was really, really nice to see that at the Pro Tour level. All right, Greg, we've got some decks to talk about here.
No, we don't.
So why don't we... I don't know. Let's take a dive into the Brewmaster's Lair.
Oh man, could I get some hops and barley on that?
Oh yeah, and this is a craft Brewmaster's Lair, you know, we're not talking about the Coors Light of decks here. These are primo, man. These are making me salivate here.
Are we definitely in a craft brew section?
We are. We are, definitely. All right. Well, top eight, Pro Tour, Rivals of Ixalan. So diverse. We had one deck that had two showings. Well, you know what, Greg? Why don't we just...
Are we talking top eight, or are we talking in the tops? Like, the day two?
We're just going to talk top eight here and work our way down.
All right.
So why don't you take us through the top eight for the Pro Tour here?
So simply put, I'm going to go over what the deck is, who played it, and then we're going to get into what the decks are consisting of shortly after. Yes. So we're going to have first place. We got Lantern Control, which is a five-color deck by Luis Salvato. Mm-hmm. Then we go to Mardu Pyromancer, piloted by Gary Thompson in second place, mm-hmm, followed by a blue-red Pyromancer build by Pascal Vierien in third, and then our favorite black-red hollow one by Ken Yukihiro in fourth place, a five-color human deck by Andrea Mengucci, or is that Andre?
Andre. That's Andre. We apologize.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure. And then we got a Traverse Shadow deck by Jean-Emmanuel Dupraz. Mm-hmm. Abzan by Reed Duke. Mm-hmm. And pulling up the bottom of the top eight, another five-color humans deck by Javier Dominguez.
Yes.
So, yes, indeed. Interesting things that you see. We have two decks focused around Pyromancer and two decks focused around five-color humans. But ultimately, the two Pyromancer decks were different on how they were playing. The five-color humans decks were pretty the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, to go a top eight and not have two duplicates, this is unheard of. I mean, I come from a time when there were four Kitchen Feeks Malyrapod decks in the top eight for Modern. This is so much more healthier than it has ever been.
Yep.
I am just so happy about this.
Absolutely. I mean, the last time we had a Modern Pro Tour, it was overrun with Eldrazi. It was probably one of the most, I don't want to say boring, but repetitive tournament formats that we've ever seen. And so it's so nice to see this here give everybody who wants to dive into the world of Modern a broad spectrum of possibilities of decks they can build, which is exactly what Wizards should be trying to do with the Pro Tour. So just to quickly look here at this top deck, Lantern Control, it's mainboarding some disruption. You've got your four Inquisitions of Kozilek, your three Thought Seizes, one Abrupt Decay, but then you've got some one-ofs here with Witchbane Orb, Graft Digger's Cage, Pyrite Spellbomb, all of which you can find using four Whir of Invention. I think this is probably the best innovation this deck has seen, bringing it back up into a top-tier form. But then you've also got cards like Academy Ruins to cycle your artifacts back up on top of your deck from your graveyard. And, you know, Inventor's Fair, so you can go and search up your artifacts. Spire of Industry, this is a five-color deck, so you're going to want to be able to spread that mana out in terms of the colors. And then, you know, in the sideboard, it uses Welding Jar to protect its artifacts when it's going up against a deck with, like, Ancient Grudge. It's just answers, answers, answers. And it's got two Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, in the sideboard as well. That card is very, very strong. This Lantern deck operates where Lantern of Insight has each player play with the top card of their library revealed. You may sacrifice Lantern of Insight to have a target player shuffle their library. And then it uses Codex Shredder to make an opponent mill the top card of their library. So what this deck essentially does is it looks at the top of your library and says, do I want them to have this card? No. Put it in your graveyard. And if you do land a card, I have an Ensnaring Bridge out, which says creatures with power greater than the number of cards in your hand can't attack. And when you keep zero cards in your hand, it's very, very hard to attack this deck. So just essentially locks your opponent out of the game, says you don't get to play Magic. We're just going to wait for the inevitable decking. Do you want to concede and move to the next game? Which is part of the reason why people say they don't like seeing this deck, but prison decks are a part of the format, and you have to learn how to game against them. You can't just say, we need this ban so I can swing creatures in and deal damage. So I, for one, like this deck. It is a pain in the butt to play against, but I think that the existence of decks like this makes the format all the better. So that's Lantern Control. Do you want to take us through another deck, Greg?
So going on down the line,
yes,
we're going to move over to the Mardu Pyromancer deck,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm really excited for the new deck tech in this.
Yes.
And that new deck tech is Bedlam Reveler.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an 8-drop Devil Horror out of
Eldritch Moon.
The last Innistrad block. Thank you. Yeah. Eldritch Moon.
Yeah,
I almost said Eldritch Horror, and I'm like, wait a minute. So it is a 3/4 for 8, and it costs one less to cast for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. Pretty sweet.
Yes.
Then it has Prowess. Then it says, when it enters the battlefield, discard your hand, then draw 3 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of an awkward card, but it does give you a lot of distance that you're looking for because, oh no, I'll cast a Bedlam Reveler, ditch what I have left in my hand, if anything. Oh, look, I got a Bedlam Reveler. Let's do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And having two, three, fours with prowess out on the board, it's really hard to deal with them. A lot of things just don't kill this.
I mean, look at how many spells you have in the deck here that are not creatures. You only have those two creatures. Everything else is a non-creature spell to trigger that prowess.
Yes. And then we've got Young Pyromancer, which is just a great card. I mean, how can that be bad?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the number of creatures. Then you go to a single Liliana of the Veil, which, you know, discards a card.
Right.
Makes people sacrifice creatures. It does that you want. Then we get into your spells. We've got a pair of Blood Moons,
mm-hmm.
which is just a great card. A pair of Collective Brutalities, which we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. A single Dreadbore, four Faithless Looting, two Fatal Pushes, four Inquisition of Kozilek, three Culligan's Command, four Lightning Bolts, four Lingering Souls, so they could get their, not only if they have like a Pyromancer out, they get 2/1s, they also get a 1/1 Elemental, and when they recast it from their graveyard after discarding with Liliana or Faithless Looting, they just get more.
Right.
Actually, I'm pretty sure they don't look to cast this up front, they're casting it from the discard. Mm-hmm. A single Metamorphose, a Terminate, and then three Thought Seizes.
Yep.
Oh, they are running a 1/0 Sacred Foundry, so they can cast that Lingering Souls on the top if they need to.
There you go. And might I point out, Leyline of Sanctity works really well against this deck as well. It fights Liliana, it fights Collective Brutality, it fights Inquisition and Thoughtseize.
It doesn't fight Liliana.
Target player sacrifices a creature.
Nope, yeah. That is each player sacrifices a creature.
Nope. Target player sacrifices
a
creature.
I thought it was each player.
No, it's target player sacrifices a creature. If it were each, it'd be so much worse. No.
That's
no.
true. Okay. Yeah. And then in your sideboard, you got Anger of the Gods, another two Collector Brutalities, a Fulminator Mage to deal with one of those lands, specifically Dark Depths.
Yep.
Ghost Quarter, Liliana of the Veil, an additional Molten Rain, Nile Spellbomb, Surgical Extraction, and a Wear and Tear.
Mm-hmm.
This deck's just a lot of fun. It plays a lot. The Bedlam Reveler is kind of where it really wants to be.
Right. Speaking of a lot of fun, if we go down one more to the blue-red Pyromancer build, it's definitely operating on the same axis where you have it has three young Pyromancers with a ton of spells that are mostly removal, card draw, and counter. But you also are running four Snapcaster Mages to get more value and reach out of those spells to trigger your young Pyromancer even more. But then it's also running three Thing in the Ice, which is absolutely amazing. But do you know what's funny? A little interaction. When Thing in the Ice flips, it says return all non-horror creatures to their owner's hand. Do you know what else is a horror? Bedlam Reveler.
Oh my god, it is.
That's something that was pointed out to me that I thought was very, very interesting. And also, you got to tip your hat to the snow-covered island and snow-covered mountain they're running for flavor reasons alongside Thing in the Ice.
Were they running Scred?
No. That's purely for the fact that they're running Thing in the Ice. I'm not kidding. I heard somebody saying that they were asking him about it, and he said that's why he was running those snow-covered lands.
Huh.
Go Vorthos.
That's so cool. Well, right? I could see why they wouldn't run Scred, because it doesn't really do much for them. Scred is just a great way to kill a creature.
Right. Okay. Well, let's continue on. All right, Greg, this is the big one. This is the big daddy we wanted to really talk about, the black-red holo one.
Oh, yeah. So this deck is a brand new deck, and I mean brand new because it just came out.
Right.
And this is a lot of great value. So it's a black red deck. Creatures, you got four Bloodgasts, four Flame Blade Adepts, four Flame Wake Phoenixes, three Gurgmag Anglers, four Hollow Ones, four Street Race, and a Tassiger.
Mm-hmm.
So all these cards are cards that benefit or do stuff with the graveyard. Except for Flame Blade. Oh, no, Flame Blade does. It gets +1/+0 when you discard a card.
This is just synergy. I love it.
And then, like, that card just gets so much better with a card like Burning Inquiry, where you draw three and discard three. And now this little itty-bitty 1/2 for one is a 4/2.
Yeah.
And you just keep channeling them. So
with Menace!
with Menace.
Yep.
So we've so got four Burning Inquiries, two Collective Brutalities, four Faceless Suitings, a Newcomer to Modern, four Goblin Lore, which says draw four, then discard three cards at random, four Lightning Bolts, and then the lands are pretty much your standard Modern package. Right. Your sideboard, though, changes up a little bit, giving us an Ancient Grudge, Big Game Hunter, two Blood Moons, one Collective Brutality, two Fatal Pushes, three Grim Lavamancers, and three Leyline of the Voids. This way they can make sure stuff stays dead.
Right, and I have actually never read what Big Game Hunter is, and now looking at it, this card is insane in this deck. It's one black-black for a 1-1. When Big Game Hunter comes into play, destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. It can't be regenerated. But wait, it has Madness for a black. So if you cast anything like Faithless Looting or even Goblin Lore and you discard Big Game Hunter, you just pay a black, you get a 1-1, and you get to destroy a creature with power 4 or greater. I mean, I understand why it's in the sideboard, but dang, that is powerful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This does a lot. It is wow. Just a really strong card.
Yeah. And I mean, the idea that you could turn one, you know, get two hollow ones out, which happened to Reed Duke in the top eight. You know, you go turn one, you Faithless Looting and you cycle a Street Wraith. All of a sudden, your hollow ones are free. You can just drop, you know, two of them, and then you got a two 4/4s on turn one. How's your opponent going to deal with that? I mean, I think Path to Exile might be the only way to get rid of a card like that, let alone two.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is definitely a roll of the dice. It's a gamble, you know, and some people like high risk, high reward decks. This would definitely be the deck for you.
It would. You're right.
You will have to mulligan aggressively, but this is definitely a new deck, new in that it's, you know, like you said, brand new, showing up on the scene at a pro tour, a modern pro tour. Yeah, no, this deck is sweet, and there's going to be a lot of people trying out this deck, trying to build it, so be prepared for that black-red hollow one. Then we're going to lump these two five-color humans decks together. We've actually gone through one of these before. It's pretty routine. They're the Aether Vial model, not so much the...
Whoa, there's a couple new cards in this one.
Oh, yeah.
So they've gotten rid of some of the other stuff, and they've gone in favor of a Kithian and a playset of Phantasmal Images.
True. As well as... oh my gosh, what's that one that when it enters the battlefield, it deals damage to target opponent equal to the number of humans you control?
Kessig
Malcontents. There you go. Yeah, that is definitely a new player in the party here, but you're right. Those Phantasmal Images, you know, can become anything.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, sure, your opponent's got a Bedlam Reveler out.
Yeah, right?
You just can be that.
Or you go, you know, Freebooter, Phantasmal Image, your Freebooter, or Meddling Mage, and Phantasmal Image, your Meddling Mage. Now they can't play, what, a tenth of their deck?
Yeah.
You know, an eighth of their deck? That's crazy. So definitely some new innovations here for the Humans deck. Moving right along, the Traverse Shadow deck. You got your Death Shadow, mm-hmm. one Grim Flayer, one Snapcaster, your four Street Wraiths, four Goyfs, two Liliana of the Veil, and then a whole lot of hate, kill here with Abrupt Decay, Dismember, Fatal Push, Inquisition of Kozilek. It is running four Mishra's Bauble to get that Delirium. Stubborn Denial, which is pretty huge, one mana counterspell. Teemer Battle Rage, Thoughtseize, Traverse the Ulvenwald. So Jund Shadow, splashing some blue for a snap and for the Stubborn Denial.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And it's got the Lingering Souls in the sideboard to bring it to the full five color after board. So,
yeah. And then we move down to Abzan by Reed Duke. This will pretty much finish off our top eight.
Yeah.
Nothing too surprising here, although they are running a single Tireless Tracker and Liliana, the Last Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Maelstrom Pulses, Lingering Souls, now Spellbomb, Collected Brutalities in the side, and a pair of Damnations.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, not much. There is another Liliana of the Last Hope in the side. So it's a cool deck. It's pretty much the same. And as we go down more and more, we're going to see a lot of the same. I think the big breakout deck was totally going to be our Black-Red Hollow one.
The Black-Red Hollow one, right.
Although there is...
You want to just read off a couple decks, deck names that people can look up?
Some other cool ones that I come across in here, there's Madcap Moon, which is a blue-red Blood Moon deck. Then we're going to go, you got a blue-red Gifts Storm deck, which uses Gifts Ungiven to throw cards into the graveyard that you can play with, like Pass in Flames or mm-hmm. Harness the Storm. To continue playing, Ad Nauseam, Infinity, Boggles. There was a white-black Zombies deck.
I figured you were going to see that one. Oh, yeah.
Jeskai Control, Devoted Company. A lot of the same, but definitely a lot of variants to be played. A Living End deck down in the 50th place.
Yeah.
And Titan Shift outside of top 64. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a lot of decks. This is probably the healthiest I've ever seen modern.
Yeah, and I think that this format is...
Or any format, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the most popular format, the people's format, and yeah. I would not be surprised. I mean, I don't want them to be going nuts with these modern Pro Tours, but you'll probably be seeing a lot more modern events popping up. I mean, this has done wonders for the modern format, having this Pro Tour, a lot more so than the Eldrazi Winter we had last time. So get yourself into modern. It is a ton of fun, and there's quite the array of decks that you can pick from. Whatever you want to do, there's probably a deck out there for you. And that's not even to say there's no more room for innovation. You know, this Black-Red Hollow one just came out. Five Color Humans gets different with every release of every set that there are humans. So, you know, keep brewing, keep it up, and enjoy your modern. I think this was absolutely a fantastic move.
Yeah. No, it really is. So, before we get too far out of this and leave you guys all to have a great day, I did want to mention Sean here opened us up with a Tapped Out account.
Yes.
Where we're going to start posting our decks. He started putting up his standard EDH Beckett Brass deck, his block constructed. And I'll probably be posting that Keshath deck here later today.
Mm-hmm. So, and thank you so much for your comments on YouTube. I know I posted the Deck Tech video for Admiral Beckett Brass, but it is a lot simpler to look up a deck list. You can get the info, even draw some sample hands, try it out for yourself before you build it. So we will definitely make a more concerted effort to post some of these deck lists we talk about. We love brewing. You know, it's a third of our show here. We love it. So, be ready for that. And be sure to visit us on YouTube. You can check us out on all the normal podcasting services. Thank you so much for everybody who interacts with us. We've got some new Twitter followers, some new Instagram followers, trying to keep posting and get some interesting stuff out there to you because we love this game and we love y'all. This community is fantastic. So let's keep playing some Magic. So anyway... make sure that you head over to Flipside Gaming, flipsidegaming.com. Check them out. They've got some great deals for you. And if you use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps on orders over $10, it will save you 10% off your purchase and help contribute to future show giveaways. You can find me at MTG_Sean on Twitter.
And you can find me at Noobslasher2003 on Twitter.
And the show is at The Win Condition. Check out our Instagram, The Win Condition MTG. Check out our YouTube page. We'll post a link in the show notes. And all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Oh, always my pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.
All righty. Talk to you guys later. Bye.